Hi, I'm Nikki from Teaching Autism, and welcome to the Autism and Special Education Community Podcast. Are you an autism or special education professional? Are you a teacher or therapist looking for support and new ideas? You may even be a parent, family member, or carer. This podcast is perfect to help you find out more information, support, and get some of your questions answered. Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode on my Teaching Autism and Special Education Community Podcast. Today on the podcast, I am so excited to welcome Emily from 21 and Sensory. Emily has sensory processing disorder, which is also known as SPD. Today on the podcast, Emily is going to be talking all about masking, what it is, how it can affect individuals, and ways that they display it, and how we can support them as well. So without further ado, let me welcome Emily onto the podcast. Welcome to the podcast today, Emily. Could you give us a little bit of background information about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Emily. I'm 25 years old and I am a graphic designer full time. I'm working in the UK and I was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder by an occupational therapist aged about 8. So I was in primary school. So my parents initially I was referred to an educational psychologist, and then from there I went on to see an occupational therapist, and that's when I was sort of diagnosed with the sensory issues. I work full time, which can be a little bit kind of full on and difficult, but I'm really into sort of my routine and stuff like that, and I'm quite a kind of creative person, so I do enjoy having kind of a structure to my day and stuff like that.
Definitely, that's great as well, and I think that provides a lot of help for many of our parents and families who listen in as well, that you've been able to go on, you're a graphic designer and you do something that you sound like you really enjoy doing as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's what I studied at uni, so I'm kind of glad to be able to use my degree to go on and get a full-time job.
That's brilliant. And I know I found you on Instagram where you were under 21 and Sensory, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started kind of an online blog when I was 21, so hence the name kind of 21 and Sensory. I just thought kind of online, a lot of kind of sensory processing stuff is mainly kind of written in the US, and it's kind of directed at sort of children and sort of toddlers, which is fine, it's all good, but there wasn't a lot to read about for like teens and adults, because obviously, you know, if you have sensory issues as a kid, you don't sort of grow out of them, sort of thing. So I kind of wanted to make a bit of a kind of, I don't know, I saw a bit of a niche for kind of writing about sort of teens and adults and stuff like that, because you don't lose your sensory issues, you just kind of adapt to them, if that makes sense.
Definitely, I love that, because like you say, there are a lot of resources as well for children in schools and school age, but then there doesn't seem to be much when they leave school, and like you say, those things don't disappear once they leave school, but there is definitely a lack of resources around. So I think what you're doing is fantastic for helping to spread some more information and personal experience as well.
Thank you, that's my aim. I mean, it's really useful to read like things like your website, where, you know, it still applies to me, sort of thing, like things like routines and, you know, structure to your day, as well as like, I mean, you know, teens and adults use like storyboards and stuff like that, like visual stuff to kind of map out their day. So it does, you know, some of it does still apply to us, but it's things like relationships and kind of handling like things in the workplace that you just don't really hear that much about, which is something that I wanted to kind of cover a bit.
Definitely. And I think those are fantastic things. And at the end of this podcast and in the show notes, I'm going to link to your Instagram as well, because I do think that it's easier sometimes to listen to someone who has personal experience rather than someone, say me, who's talking about things I've learned from you from a personal experience. You can just learn so much more as well.
Yeah, and I think like I'm always really open to kind of people asking questions and stuff. I get sort of emails from kind of parents and guardians, as well as sort of teens and stuff, and everyone has a different sort of kind of question, or, you know, asking about how you cope and stuff like that. So I think it's good to have somewhere to sort of turn to if, you know, you're finding school or college or uni difficult. Otherwise there isn't kind of that many resources.
Definitely. And I think by you having a social media account as well, that makes it a little bit easier for people to sort of get in touch with you. I know a lot of people can feel maybe a little bit anxious reaching out to, you know, a full-on website or a business, but you having social media makes you relatable and people will feel a little bit more confident getting in touch with you as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I kind of, you know, say like you can always message me on Instagram or email me, like, you know, just because I know everyone has kind of different things that they're struggling with or things that they want to say. Do you know, do you kind of suffer with this too, or do you find this difficult? So for me, it's really nice to find people who relate to the sort of stuff that I'm going through as well. It's really nice to kind of that sense of like community.
I love that. I love that you have a sort of community feel going on with it. And I actually came across you when you shared a visual image about masking, and I loved how many people were interacting with that, and you can see how helpful so many people found it as well, just from really one image that you shared, how much help you provided from that image.
Yeah, I think as a graphic designer, I think quite visually, and I kind of enjoy doing sort of little doodles and things, but I just thought maybe I can kind of do it more towards kind of the things that I'm dealing with most days. And also it's quite a like fun and easy thing to share, and people kind of relate to like little drawings and stuff like that. So I do find that Instagram is good for that sort of thing.
Definitely. And one of the things I always try and get across are that people say, you know, oh, it's only children in special education schools who like visuals and refer to visuals. But I think that's wrong. I think almost everyone in the world relates better to visuals, because the information you provided, it was quick and easy to read. It was something that caught your eye rather than a long paragraph, which people may scroll across. So I think that image was so relatable for thousands of people to just get some quick and easy information as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like you say, we're all kind of visual in some respect. And, you know, I know lots of people kind of my age and, you know, different sort of school, university, or kind of, you know, even higher education than that, use kind of visual storyboards and like to kind of plan out their days very visually, and also have like kind of sort of cue cards for when they go sort of nonverbal and things like that. So it's not that we don't kind of use the same techniques as sort of children and toddlers. We just sort of adapt it, so it's kind of relevant for our age, I guess.
Yes, definitely. I think it just sort of progresses, where as you grow, the things that you use grow as well. And I think that's sort of a natural process of growing, where as we all get older, there's things that we still like doing as children, or what we found helpful as children, but we just adapt to them. Like picture books, if you love picture books as a child, eventually, you know, that will progress to bigger books and longer books and things like that. It's just a natural progression for what helps us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that I think a lot of potentially kind of parents and teachers, you know, you kind of assume that maybe that sort of drops off, but I don't think it does.
No, I 100% agree. So today, the reason I've got you on here is I wanted people to find out more about you, but also to dig a little bit deeper into that image you shared about masking. And what I'd really love, first of all, is for you to just sort of explain to my audience, what is masking?
Okay, so to me, I feel that masking sort of, it involves trying to kind of hide your sensory issues, or if you're like autistic, trying to hide, you know, those sort of issues as well, so that you kind of feel like other people will accept you. So like it can also be referred to as sort of camouflaging. So you kind of like act in a way that other people will think that we are kind of normal, because we're kind of keen to be sort of accepted sort of socially. So it's really like a desire to sort of fit in and like create sort of connections with others. So we're just trying to kind of fit into the situation so that we can kind of make friends, maybe improve our like social status. And for things like job interviews, you kind of, it's almost like sort of putting on an act, if that makes sense, like putting on a sort of front, in that you're kind of hiding how you're feeling, you're potentially bottling up, you know, any anxieties and stuff like that, and you're doing it to try and get through a situation. So can kind of sometimes you sort of imitate other people's kind of behavior or actions. And I don't know, it's quite a lot of, like, they say it's like a lot of like cognitive effort to like put on a mask, and it can be quite exhausting because you kind of get overloaded quite quickly, and it can have quite a negative effect because you're constantly putting on and trying to keep up this like front. So when you get home, you kind of, I find if I've been sort of masking all day, you know, say in the office that I work in, I'll come home and I'll be sort of emotionally sort of drained a bit because you're just trying to constantly keep up this sort of kind of look of, you know, just being okay.
Definitely. And that sounds exhausted. Like you say, there's so many things you're having to do through the day, and you could be masking more than one thing as well. So I can imagine that's draining in all aspects, like you said, emotionally, mentally, even physically draining as well, because you're having to put up that constant act. And it's sort of, you know, it's done in, I think, maybe not the right way, but the right way at the same time as well. Because like you say, you're trying to fit in, you're trying to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people realize when others are masking either. Do you sort of think that can go under the radar and people don't realize?
Definitely. I think also as you're kind of growing up, you get, for me, I've definitely gotten better at it, to the extent that it's kind of, I can sort of turn it on and off quite quickly. So it's quite a kind of, I don't know, you can't always potentially tell when I'm masking. So, you know, someone like my mum will, you know, have to actively ask me, you know, how are you doing in this situation? Are you okay? Because I won't, you know, I'm not making it obvious, sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And if, like, you know, you say even your mum isn't quite sure when you're masking and has to ask you as well, I think it's even harder for friends, or if you're in school or in work, because your mum knows you better than all those people. And if she can't tell, then it's very likely nobody else can tell either.
Exactly. And I think masking is, it's a way of keeping up appearances and maintaining things like relationships and careers and stuff like that. If you're autistic or you have, you know, sensory issues, it can sort of, like you say, come at a heavy cost because it's physical as well as emotional kind of exhaustion. And it's kind of quite an anxious kind of, internally, it's quite a difficult thing to constantly like keep on top of.
Definitely. I can 100% imagine how just a huge part of your life that must be, and the energy that it takes as well. But I know you've touched on different things like sensory, but what would you say are some reasons that individuals may mask? And I know this could be different for every person, but what would you say are some reasons?
I think some reasons are, I think we have a real kind of want to fit in and to not kind of stick out, if that makes sense. You really want to, for me, I really want to just go under the radar in certain situations. So in sort of everyday life and in the office, I very much keep kind of myself to myself. And I don't know, I don't want to be seen as too different. And I don't want to kind of stand out as being potentially kind of, you know, odd or weird in what I do. So it's kind of, it's a way of sort of protecting yourself in a way. But also I feel like sometimes not even I realize that I've kind of turned on the mask, if that makes sense. It's kind of, it can be an automatic sort of thing. So as soon as I kind of go out during the day and stuff like that, it will just sort of happen because that's how used to it I am. So I think everyone sort of masks differently, but there is very much a sense of turning it on and off, and, you know, you kind of correct how you behave and things like, you kind of stop habits and fidgeting and stuff. You just, you don't want to bring attention to yourself.
Yes, definitely. I can totally understand that. And that must be really hard. Like you say, if you're stopping yourself from fidgeting and things, but a lot of people will need to do things as a sort of self-regulation. But if you're masking those, I can imagine that can have quite a negative effect if you can't do those sort of self-regulating things to help you through the day because you're masking because you're worried about other people and fitting in as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, if I've spent all day sort of masking, when I come home, I will be, you know, potentially I can be on the edge of a meltdown and to me, a meltdown is more of a kind of sensory thing where I just get quite overwhelmed and I tend to go kind of nonverbal and sort of shut down. So it's not like a tantrum or anything like that. It's kind of, I don't know, you've kind of come home, you're trying to like decompress and kind of get rid of all the like stress of the day. But sometimes, you know, just even being in a busy office or a noisy office is enough to kind of tip you over the edge. And I think that sort of burnout and kind of meltdown when you come home, it can take a few hours to like get over sort of thing. So it does kind of eat into your time, if that makes sense.
I can imagine, because, you know, even if someone, even if they're not diagnosed anything, if they are having a tough day in work, they can come home very stressed. But for you, who may be working with that same exact person, for you it's even harder because you've been masking all day on top of a stressful day. So going home then is going to be even harder for you to decompress and get over from that day as well. And, you know, it's going to take you a little bit of time, I'd have thought, to get back to sort of your normal regulating self after all that day.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be quite difficult because, you know, I'll come home and my parents will, you know, see that I'm a little bit sort of tired. And it's kind of hard to explain to them what's going on internally. At work, I regularly kind of escape to the toilets. I'm very good at whenever I'm in a situation, it's like I'm very good at seeking out the nearest toilet to kind of escape to, because even at work, I work in an open plan office and I find it can be too much at times because there's people talking constantly. So I will escape to the toilet and I'd kind of document that on my Instagram. And I think a lot of people relate to that. A lot of people say, you know, you've got every so often you need to take yourself off and just kind of sit in the quiet for a bit. So I've kind of learned that that's good for me to keep on top of my emotions and stuff like that during the day. Because if I don't, you know, go outside or go to the toilet or just go out for a walk in, you know, regular intervals during my day, I will become much more overloaded. And that means it will take more time potentially out of my evening because I'm kind of, you're almost like recovering.
I can imagine definitely it's, I can just, well, you know, personally, I haven't been through that, but I can imagine how hard that is for you and how much it takes away from the evening. But I do really like the idea of going to the toilet for a break, because that is something everyone does naturally. So it wouldn't make you sort of stand out for going to the toilet. So you can go there and still sort of keep up your charades or however you sort of want to refer to it so that you're not standing out, but you can go there and just decompress and let everything out and just be yourself for a little bit too.
Exactly. And like you say, it's kind of a normal thing to like excuse yourself to go to the toilet or something like that. But for us kind of like sensory beings, it's a really good way of just escaping from it all and like recollecting your thoughts and stuff. Because I'll find, like, say if I'm out with friends or something, say if we're out at a restaurant or something like that, I'll find that it can be sort of so noisy that sensory wise, I don't know if I'm full because I just kind of lose that sort of sensation. I don't know if I'm hungry and I'll sort of zone out of conversation and things like that. And when that starts to happen, I think, right, why don't I just go to the toilets for, you know, 5-10 minutes or something and try and kind of recollect my thoughts and calm down a bit and then go back into the situation. Like you go back a little bit more refreshed.
That sounds fantastic. And like you say, even if you get to a restaurant, it is normal behavior to say to, you know, the waitress, as soon as you get in, could you tell me where the toilets are? And then if you need that break, you know, people going to the toilet in a restaurant, that's not something that's going to make you stand out. And going for that quick 5 minutes, if that gives you that refreshed feeling, helps you feel a little bit calmer and go back to the situation, you know, more yourself, you know, that is worth going to the toilet for those few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's these like little kind of tricks and tips that I've kind of, as I've grown older, I've kind of worked out what works for me. And it's just having all these little coping mechanisms in place that kind of help every day, you know, it's just a little bit more easier.
I can imagine. And that is something maybe someone else hasn't thought of, but that tip now could totally transform the way that they go to school, the way they go to work, out in public, shopping, restaurants, so many different ways that that little tip can help someone improve their life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that I try and share online as well. You know, I like to be quite genuine and honest and say, you know, this is what I found hard today, but this is how I coped and sort of things like that. So I'm trying to be quite sort of upfront with people and say, yeah, you know, I'm 25, but it's good to kind of have, like, for example, I have like a little kind of sensory box of things that I'll just kind of dive into, fidgets and things like that. And it doesn't matter what age you are, if that sort of thing works for you and it keeps you, you know, calm and at a better level, then I think it's quite a good thing. Even if you've got sort of fidgets in your pockets and stuff for your commute and things like that, you know, I'm very much of the opinion that it doesn't matter how old you are, whatever works for you, you know, works for you.
Definitely. And one that I've seen recently that I love is a friend of mine. He has a pop socket on the back of his phone. I don't know if you've heard of them. And when he's anxious, he'll pop them out and back in, out and back in. Now, on a train or a bus, people aren't really going to notice. Like, maybe the sound would make them notice, but that's not going to be seen as anything bigger than someone playing with a pop socket. But that can really help soothe him as well.
I think also just having that repetition and something to distract you as well, especially kind of, like you say, if he's suffering with anxiety. And commuting can be really difficult because you're coming up against different people, different smells, different kind of, I don't know, personal space. It seems to be a real issue when commuting. So I can see that that behavior, you know, it's just, it's something to distract you in that situation.
Definitely. Now, I know we've sort of touched on how masking can have an effect. So like you say, it can take time out of your evening. You can feel exhausted from it. Would you say there are any effects that masking can have on someone?
If you're masking, you tend to bottle up your kind of anxiety, any thoughts, any sort of stimming. So like self-regulated sort of behavior. I think also you tend to hide your feelings and your mood. And it's very much, I don't know, all these things kind of build up inside you. And I think that's what can lead to a meltdown. And sometimes these things will build up over the course of a few days. And that will make a meltdown sort of, you know, more defined and bigger sort of a few days later. But I also find that, I don't know, I become quite nonverbal and I find it difficult to like communicate. So say if I'm in a loud situation, I'll go very quiet and find it difficult. You know, if someone says, oh, are you okay? I'm just like, I'm fine, because I'm sort of deflecting, you know, the question. I don't want the attention, if that makes sense. But I think, I don't know, those are the things that affect me.
Definitely, because I think sort of maybe answering that question would draw attention to it for you. And I can imagine that then would probably sort of, like the fizzy bottle analogy that people talk about, and everything's a little shake to that closed fizzy bottle, and then you don't know where that one more thing is going to go with that sort of bottle, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly like that. And I think that's what I try and get sort of through my doodles, is the little sort of things you can notice if someone is masking, you know, if we're trying to sort of imitate your posture or your, I don't know, even your facial expression and stuff like that. We're just trying to fit in and do what everyone else is doing around us.
Definitely. So I know you sort of said, you know, you're imitating, you may go quiet. What are some other ways that you think people would mask so that others can look out for these signs and start to maybe identify or support them as well?
I think particularly if you see someone potentially sort of zoning out of a conversation or sort of, I don't know, fidgeting or even just going quite quiet and, you know, needing to take 5 minutes out, you know, just to go outside or something like that. That's how I'd usually sort of cope at parties. And I think you can always tell the sort of good friends, because they'll come out and find you and make sure that you're okay. You know, they'll notice that you needed, you know, a bit of space. And I think most of my friends don't really know about my sensory issues, but I know a lot of them realize that, you know, I'm not a party person. I'm not a sort of person that enjoys busy environments. So just having someone that will check in and make sure sort of you're okay. And yeah, I think the main ways of seeing if people are masking is just noticing those little changes in someone. You know, just going quiet is quite a big thing for me.
I think those are great as well for people to start to think about things like that. And it's great that you have friends who are able to recognize that as well and be understanding that maybe this isn't your type of place that you really want to be, or you may just need a few minutes to yourself as well.
Yeah, Exactly. And I think also that's what I found difficult sort of throughout university. There is this culture of going out, you know, drinking, that sort of thing. And I don't enjoy going out and I don't drink. So immediately that puts me sort of out there as someone who's quite different, which is difficult. But people soon get to know that, oh, that's just Emily. That's, you know, who she is. She doesn't, you know, enjoy that sort of thing. And I don't know, you get sort of excluded from some things, but at least people understand that it's not your thing. And that's what's can be quite hard to get across sometimes.
Definitely. And I can 100% relate, because I don't drink alcohol. I don't do parties or things. And the first question people always ask are, but why not? But if you're into partying and drinking, nobody says, but why?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't really understand that. It's, you know, everyone has the choice and everyone, you know, enjoys certain things in life. And yeah, you're right. You're only questioned if you're not doing something, not if you are doing it.
Definitely. And that can really have a sort of effect on social situations as well, because like you said, people then will maybe stop inviting you to things, and maybe they don't do it thinking how that would have a negative effect on you. They're just thinking, like you said, oh, that's Nikki, oh, that's Emily. They don't like partying, they don't drink, so they won't come, so we won't invite them. But then they don't realise the knock-on effect that not inviting can have as well.
In that way, it is a vicious cycle, because you want to be invited and you want to be included, but you know that it's going to take so much out of you if you do go, sort of thing. So it's difficult, because, you know, you want to fit in at uni, especially, you know, people the same age as you, that sort of thing. But I was always the sort of person who would say, it's not really my thing, but we could go and do this, and this is more my thing, you know, sort of like a quiet pub sort of thing where you can drink a soft drink, or an activity like bowling or something like that. So instead of just saying sort of a like outright no, I'd kind of give an alternative sort of thing, which I would, you know, be happier doing.
I love the idea where you're not saying no, but you're giving alternatives as well. And then it's up to the other person as well, where they can start to think in the future, okay, Emily doesn't want to come to the nightclub or the party, but she really does like when we go to the pub and we have food together, or we go to a little coffee shop. And that gives them ideas for future meetups as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it means like less of a group meeting up as well, potentially. So there's less people to focus on, less kind of conversation to filter. I find it quite difficult in a group in terms of sort of eye contact, you know, not keeping too much and not, you know, kind of not looking at someone enough. I find that quite difficult. Whereas if you're with a couple of people, you don't have to keep kind of moving to look at them and stuff like that. So I do find smaller meetups are much more sort of better suited to me.
Yes, totally. I can see how that would be more relaxing for you as well. So you're not constantly on edge, overthinking things, going through things. You can just sort of sit down, relax, and sort of enjoy that moment as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the main questions that I would love to ask you is, how do you think others around you or other individuals who are masking can help them when they're masking? Like, I know you said your friends can recognize sometimes when you need some quiet time. How do you think you can sort of give people advice to help others?
I think it's like you say, you know, having a supportive friend or something like that is really useful. But even as, say, a teacher or a lecturer or whatever, just understanding that, you know, one of your students might need just to have a safe space to escape to, or they might just, you know, not need permission to just take 5 minutes, if that makes sense. You know, if you see someone kind of popping out briefly, not to sort of question it and highlight it, sort of thing. I mean, obviously you'd have a discussion beforehand to say, you know, if I get overwhelmed, I will just pop out, but, you know, not for long, sort of thing. But I think for me, just having a safe and like quiet space to just go to and take five is really helpful. You know, just having a teacher who's understanding that, you know, you might need to take a break, or understanding the need for certain aids as well. So for example, like maybe noise cancelling headphones or like ear defenders if, say, you're out on something like a school trip or like something like that. Just having these little kind of aids, even things like, I think I had like a writing slope when I was in primary school and a kind of squishy cushion to sit on. These are all like little things that help to make you feel more normal and make you kind of learn in a kind of better way, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And I think maybe one of the main things that people don't think about and they do automatically is try not to draw attention to it. Like you said, if someone needs a break, just let them sort of go. Don't draw attention and be like, hang on, everyone, so-and-so needs 5 minutes. You know, that drawing the attention could probably make it a lot worse. But whereas having that discussion beforehand, letting someone just leave for a few moments, come back, even if they just provide them with a printout of notes at the end of every lesson for what they may have missed, but that will have a much better effect on that individual who's trying to learn for themselves anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I've found sort of at university and lectures and stuff like that, I'd take a dictaphone and record it in case, like record the lecture in case I did need to pop out, because, you know, that way I wouldn't be missing anything. Or, you know, even just having, like, I know a couple of my autistic friends have little kind of lanyards with sort of cue cards on that are saying that I'm finding this too overwhelming, and just to kind of flash that to a teacher or to a like support worker or something like that is enough, sort of rather than explain in your head what's going on, just to sort of flash a card and say I need 5 minutes, or, you know, I'm finding this too much. I think that's quite helpful.
I love that. There's such subtle ways, but you can still ensure that you're doing the best for yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's, like I said before, like all these little tips and tricks and these coping mechanisms that you do definitely pick up along the way. And I think that's what's good about sort of social media as well, is sharing like what works for you and, you know, kind of looking at other people and what they do and think, oh, actually, I could try that next time I'm out, or next time I'm on a train or commuting and stuff like that, because it can be really difficult. It can be really overwhelming, and it's hard, especially when you're getting older. You're kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm expected to be, you know, an adult who's got it all together and can kind of live independently. And at the moment I can't. And I think that's okay. You know, everyone needs different levels of support and, you know, different people, isn't it really?
Definitely. I think the worst thing that ever happened was people sort of got this social norm in their head where people have to move out of their parents by 20. They have to have 3 children in the family by 30. I think all these things are the worst thing that could happen, because like you say, everyone's different and everyone wants different things from life. Everyone needs different things from life. And it's okay to have your own social norm. You don't have to fit in with everyone else's expectations of life.
Exactly. And that's the thing I find difficult, like about sort of, I have, like, if I have my own personal Facebook or something like that, is people my age are, you know, they're hitting the milestones of having children and getting married and having their first places and things like that. And when I see that, you know, the only thing, the natural thing, is to compare yourself. And actually, I think for, you know, autistic and sensory people, it's not a healthy thing to do, but it's quite an automatic thing to do. And like you say, people do things at different times, and that should be okay. You know, you shouldn't feel like you have to be rushed into things. But yeah, it is difficult, and I think social media makes that difficult as well.
Definitely. But then on the flip side, social media can be fantastic, especially when we have pages like yours on Instagram, where that can be a safe space for a lot of people to go.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I used to have a personal Instagram with kind of, you know, school friends and things like that. But now I'm only logged in to my 21 and Sensory Instagram, because it's so genuine and everyone is actually sharing kind of exactly what they're going through each day, whether it's sort of, you know, mental health wise or sensory wise and things like that. And I find, I don't know, just to have genuine people, you know, we're all struggling with different things, but we're all kind of sharing little ideas along the way. I find that way more helpful than, you know, sort of typical social media where I would be comparing myself. So yeah, I think, like you say, social media can definitely be a good thing.
Definitely. And I know at the show notes now, I am going to share your Instagram feed, because I know people will find your Instagram really helpful, whether it's for an individual, whether it's for a teacher, even a family member. The advice and tips that you share can help a whole range of different people in our community.
I hope so. I try and, you know, it's not just aimed at teens and adults. It's meant to be quite a kind of genuine thing that, you know, even parents and guardians and, you know, support workers and things like that, and teachers can get ideas from and things like that. I've had teachers say that they've sort of printed out one of my doodles and stuck it up in their classroom. And to me, that is quite an amazing thing to think that, you know, one of my little drawings, you know, is up in a classroom somewhere. But it's the little things like that, you know, if I can provide a little bit of help and some tips, then I feel quite good.
Definitely. It is amazing what you're doing. And like you say, all those things can be adapted for any age and any situation as well. And you are at 21 and Sensory on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. I am.
Brilliant. So thank you so much for coming on today, Emily, and sharing all that information. I can't wait to have it go live and for everyone to hear just all your helpful information, your experience and your tips as well.
Thank you for having me. And it's been really good just to kind of chat through and also have someone else sort of relate to all these little things that are going on as well. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Emily. And I will speak to you again soon.
Okay, thanks.
So that is my interview with the wonderful Emily from 21 and Sensory. Please head on over to the show notes where I'm going to link all of the places that you can find Emily, including her Instagram, her Twitter, and her website. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you again soon.